Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C. Potter's beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune, joins me. Padres. Oh, my gosh. Ryan, they just won't go away, or they won't leave us alone. I just keep hearing from people that gave up on them a long time ago. And I've been saying those people, hey, probably be proved right, but they're not dead yet. And now the Padres are saying we're not dead yet. Where would you like to start?
Yeah, every time I'm done, they pull me back in, right? And that's, Kevin, the last time we talked, I think we had both sort of agreed that they were not a playoff team. And then they go out, they take two or three from Baltimore. And to me, Kevin, it's not just that they took two or three from Baltimore. It was how they took two or three from Baltimore. They beat up on a really good team twice. And with some clutch hitting, with solid pitching performances again. I mean, Blake Snell last night continued to make a case for the National League Cy Young. This is a team that has done a pretty impressive turnaround since the last Diamondbacks series, and then you've got the Diamondbacks coming in. The larger issue, though, is that they're fun. The last two nights or three nights have been fun, highlighted by Fernando Tatis Jr. doing something incredible last night. Talk about the steal of home.
Yeah, they're... You don't see those very often. It was the fourth straight steal of home in the major leagues this season. The ninth in Padres history, the first since 2016 when Travis Jankowski did it. A straight steal of home is just stealing home, not a double steal. And I went through and watched all 15 of the steals of home in 2023 just to make sure. And all but four of them involved a catcher throwing down to second base, and then the guy on third comes home. This was simply, you got a left-handed pitcher on the mound. Fernando Tatis Jr. kind of just creeps off. He sees that, you know, before the pitch, pitcher isn't really paying attention. But it was, what was wild about this one, no one, not the guy on deck, not the guys in the dugout, not the catcher, no one knew this was happening. And Tatis walked like half the way.
You know,
from the pitcher, no clue whatsoever. Tatis was out of his mind afterward. His teammates were. And I will say, you know, for all these sellouts that have happened at Petco Park, and kudos to the fans, the team hasn't really played that brand of baseball from 2020, the parts of 2021, parts of last year. It hasn't given them reason to lose their minds. And last night that did happen a few times. Two out hits, jack up a crowd. Home runs, jack up a crowd. Defensive plays, jack up a crowd. And, well, steals of home do that as well. And the Padres had all of them last night.
Yeah, it was as comprehensive a game as I think I've seen them play in a while. I received a couple texts from people last night who I know watch and pay attention to the Padres, calling it maybe the most complete game they've seen all year from them. Now, I would argue the night when Fernando Tatis did a little bit of everything. But my goodness, that was 2 months ago, Kevin. This is a sign at least that they might be a little bit more exciting down the stretch than they've been. The thing that impressed me the most about that steal of home was that there was no play at the plate. When I think about Padres steals of home, and to me, Everett Cabrera stealing home against the Dodgers to beat them, I think it was on July 4th weekend a decade ago, I still remember. Melvin Upton Jr. stole home with one of the greatest slides I've ever seen back when he was a Padre for about a month and a half. And then this. Both of those were insane, not only dashes for home, but great slides at the plate. This one, you're right, Tatis could have walked. And it's incredible. And Kevin, we say all the time that pitching, the next day's starting pitcher is momentum. You know, that there's not really anything that these little events probably don't mean as much to the team as it means to a fan. But is this something that could light a fire for them, do you think?
I am reluctant to answer that based on the fact that we have thought that a dozen, 20 more times, they thought that many times. Everything you say is correct, and yet it has to keep happening. I mean, again, like Bob Melvin got tired of saying that a month ago, you know, like, hey, we need to get on a run. Hey, you know, tomorrow's the big day because, you know, they, like I wrote in the newsletter today, you know, they have not won more than three games in a row. They are the only team in the major leagues. They are one of two teams in the last five full seasons to have not at least put together a four-game win streak. So it really is about that. But yes, the answer to that is yes. And you know what is important? That they believe it, right? Like, and if they, you talked about the sign that they may be exciting down the stretch. Look, this thing could go off a cliff at any time. Or, right, like they'll, I don't know what the analogy is, like they'll see the cliff and they'll just jump it and you know, evil Knievel. Did he ever actually land a jump? Like, they can do this. Like, they are good enough to do this. That has been shown over and over and over that they are. That's where it's like when people say they're not good, it's like they're flawed. They got some problems, but they're good. So can do this. I still don't know. I mean, you got to look ahead and see who's ahead of them, the number of teams that are ahead of them, the amount of games that are remaining. And it's going to be, look, it's going to take a run. They got to win like 7-8 in a row, get themselves in a place where September is like one game back or something. Right.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're 100% right. Kevin, one of your notes while we're talking about Tatis, this was a guy who was awful for about a month and he's been pretty good lately. Those numbers seem to have turned around a little bit. He's back to being sort of the Fernando Tatis that we saw the first 4 months of the season. What is he doing differently?
Well, he's a singles hitter now. No, he obviously has the ability to also turn those into doubles and home runs. But like what he has focused on now is just going with the pitch. Just this is what I'm going to do because here's the pitch that's coming. And what is amazing is that he can do it. You don't think Jake Cronenworth wants to do that all the time? You know, you don't even think like Manny Machado wants to do that all the time. Like, and they're two different hitters and Manny makes adjustments and gets on heaters. But like, when you're watching Tatis in one of these times, and he has had these before, even though three hits in the last two games had never gone three in back-to-back games, but it's like he's doing it on purpose. Like, I can do this, so I'm going to put the ball here. Like, it's truly amazing to me how good he is when he's this good. Like, this is the hit that needs to happen. Okay, boom, there it is through the 5-5 hole. This is the hit that needs to happen. Oh, there it is. I just put it over the second baseman. That's what he is doing now.
Yeah, it's
He shortened everything up briefly. He shortened up his swing and he's going with the pitch. There was like, while he was having some bad luck, he was looking at that going, wait, look at all these balls I'm hitting hard. And he was trying to swing his way out of it, right? Get a couple home runs and suddenly slumps over. Now he decided, no, you know what? I'm going to get a couple hits and the slump's over.
To me, what makes Fernando Tatis so compelling a player is that he can become who you need. You know, we talked about Freddie Freeman being that guy, right? A couple of podcasts ago. You need a single, he can do that. You need a home run, he can do that. Tatis, to me, has gone from Alex Rodriguez, which is a tall, strong shortstop, bombing home runs, to there's a little Tony Gwynn in his game now. He's playing right field. He's hosing guys at second base. He's getting singles. He's going opposite field. He's stealing bases, which, again, people forget. Tony Gwynn did a lot of that early in his career. I mean, he's a chameleon in a way, and I'm not sure that there are many baseball players in this era who can do that.
He has the ability to be that. I mean, he has the ability to, because of his baseball acumen, to steal home without anyone in the stadium knowing it's happening. But yes, he has that ability. It'll be interesting to see how now he's done it before, gets comfortable at the plate. Pitchers are like, oh, this guy's going to hit anything. They start making mistakes and he starts hitting 450 foot bombs. That's how it goes. If, you know, history is our guide. And then he gets in another, you know, chase mode and then has to redo it again, but he can redo it again and he can redo it again. This one lasted a little longer, actually the longest of his career, but he can do it again fairly quickly. And that's the amazing thing about him.
Well, and so much can happen. I think what really compounded his struggles there early was when he's not getting on, he doesn't have the opportunity to do those special things like we saw last night. Right.
Yes.
He is such, people forget he's among the fastest and among the strongest players in baseball. When you get, and he's smart, you know, when you get on base, you can put those that speed and those smarts to really good use.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw that last night. So very interesting stuff. Kevin, I'm going to test our little momentum theory tonight because they have to face Zach Gallen again, and they've got Rich Hill. Kevin, we've seen Rich Hill twice. The first outing was an unmitigated disaster. The second outing was disaster-ish. What are they expecting from him? And what's a realistic expectation for a guy who is older than me and playing big league baseball?
You know, he has had good starts this year. So it's you're hesitate to say, oh, he's a three inning guy or, you know, whatever. Like, you'll be fortunate to still be in the game. And then you put in Pedro Avila or whatever. That's kind of the contingency plan. That's kind of where they're at. But, you know, I look, Rich Hill's been horrible for the Padres. Both games, like, it just shows what a pitcher throwing 87 miles an hour who has to locate his stuff, that the margin for error isn't there. Because there was a path in both games where those things didn't happen to him. Be they a call by an umpire that didn't go his way, be it a flare hit that prolonged an inning. Like, I'm not – make no mistake here, I'm not, like, saying Rich Hill wasn't bad. I'm just saying, like, he could be good again. He could be a guy who can eat up some innings for you, give you five, and you hope that you have scored some runs or that it's a game, right? It's a 2-2 game or 2-1 game. Or heck, if you're even down 3-1 and he gave you five, right? You're like, okay, that's what our offense is for, right? Like, you know, we could score more than three runs. So that's what you're hoping out of Rich Hill.
Yeah, it's such an interesting weekend. Four games with the Diamondbacks. Starting tonight, not only do they see Zach Gallen again, Zach Gallen who shoved last week against them the Saturday game in that series. They also face Merrill Kelly, who, and maybe, Kevin, it's just my sort of short-time thoughts here. Every time Merrill Kelly pitches against the Padres, seems like he does pretty well. You get Brandon Pfaadt, who, again, pitched the Diamondbacks to a win last Sunday. Padres need to turn this around. I mean, if they think that they're a playoff team here, I mean, this is a three out of four or sweep the series situation, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I could be sitting here on Sunday when they've gone 2-2 and the Cubs lost and the Padres are still sitting 4.5 back. And you're going, oh, my gosh, they somehow didn't get any worse when they dropped another ball. Right. Like, because, you know, if they went 2-2, they didn't get blown out in those two losses. One of them's going to be a 4-3 loss where, you know, they left 14 men on base and lost in the, you know, eighth inning or something. And you're going to be like, they blew it again. But here they are. They didn't really lose any ground because the team's ahead of them. But yes, I'm inclined to absolutely agree with you that, I mean, and how many times have they said it? How many times have they acknowledged it? That basically this is a series we got to do. And to me, that's one of their issues. And we don't have time to get into it now. No one has their arms around it. But like that they have not been able to do that with their talent, with their experience, they haven't been able to say, we're going to sweep this team and do it outside of the Rangers series. Okay. Obviously they did sweep the Angels as well, but in terms of that was like a, hey, we got to win to show the front office and we got to win to stay in this right at the end of January. And so they went out and they swept the Texas team that was somewhat depleted. And, you know, but there has not been a response like you just talked about, like got to win this one, do it. Very difficult to sweep. So how about 3-1?
Yeah. Kevin, if it's 3-1, and again, you had a great note in today's Padres Daily Newsletter about where the Padres stand in the wild card race here. If it's 3-1, are we willing to declare that they're contenders again?
Oh yeah. I mean, like, I want to be clear that we both were leaning toward they're not playoff team, but we, you know, we're not fans. We're journalists. We did say last podcast, it's not over. So I want to make clear on that. Right. Like, so we're not having to do some sort of retraction or something. Ah. But yes, I think that was always the thing, right? If they can go on a run, and a run, yes, is 5 or 6 wins in a row, but it is also like 8 of 10 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Yes.
Because you don't win every game in baseball, but they're at the point where it has to be like 700 baseball. It has to be like 800 baseball over a small period of time. They need a run. Yes, Ryan, because if they go 3-1, you're thinking now they're 3.5 back, worst. You're thinking they go 3-1, they gain a game, right? No one except for the Cubs over that time here recently, among the people in front of them, has gone on a nice run. So all those teams got on a nice run to get up there. But recently, they've just been the Marlins, the Reds, the Diamondbacks, the Cubs, just been trading places. And so if the Padres can go on a run, and that is, again, add it to the trash heap of things that will destroy them this winter, is knowing that you didn't need 92 wins to get to the playoffs this year.
Right.
You just needed to be better than the Marlins. And if you can't do that, then that's really going to bug you.
The Marlins, who, by the way, Kevin, come to town Monday. It's huge. And we touched on this on the last episode, and I feel like I'm repeating myself. I mean, 4 against the Diamondbacks, 3 against the Marlins, 3 against Milwaukee, 3 against a terrible St. Louis team, 3 against the Giants, 3 against the Phillies. I mean, here you go.
Yeah.
Somehow, inexplicably, as terribly as they played last weekend in stretches against the Diamondbacks, inexplicably, it's still right there in front of them.
Which is why all along I've been saying it's not over until this last week when they went to Arizona and played like that, because they didn't do what you just talked about, which was seize a moment that they said they absolutely had to seize. You had to say, look, come on, fool me once, but fool me 40 times. And like, you guys just don't have it in you, right?
Right.
But like, yes, exactly. Go ahead and look at the schedules coming up too. It is going to be difficult. It's going to require a run, but look at the Cubs. The Cubs and the Reds play the Diamondbacks. Like all these teams play each other too. The good news is there, one of them's going to win. Or lose every night. The bad news is one of them is going to win every night. But they are. It's not like all of them are going to go on a run. They're going to beat each other up to some extent too, while the Padres have the schedule that you just talked about, where they get to play some of them.
Right.
But as Bob Melvin has said, players have said, Bob said it last night, that's all well and good. We have to win these games.
Yes.
Yes. We have to actually win them. It's not like, but it's like, They're so exasperated that it hasn't happened, because they honestly do believe the words they're saying, that they're better than this. Now,
Kevin,
doubt has creeped in their minds, I promise you that, but they do believe.
It's, to me, it's the 2020 baseball season again. Every game counts like 3 times what it normally does, right? This is a Monday in late August, and it's appointment television for me, because this game matters so much. This pennant race is tightening up. Kevin, we're up against it just a little bit time-wise. Any other things that you'll be looking for here against the Diamondbacks, and anybody who's jumped out at you here in their series win over Baltimore?
I mean, again, what do we got? We got Hill going, Lugo, who pitched better. They get
Darvish.
Waka, Darvish, right? We're at the point of the season, and this is where it gets a little like you're covering the team, and all year you're like looking for all these little nuggets, and you walk to the ballpark now and it's like, are they going to win or lose? That's really all I care about today.
Right. It's the game. What's compelling to me, Kevin, I said this to somebody last night. The Padres could have the National League Cy Young Award winner. They could have, if not the National League Most Valuable Player, the National League Most Valuable Player finalist in Ha-Sung Kim. Based on what he's doing, based on some of these numbers?
He better finish hot. I love Ha-Sung Kim, and I think that you're correct. He's going to get some, like, bottom 5 votes and be a top 10 finisher, but they're not good enough for him to be. But I'm going with your point. Go ahead. Yes. Okay.
They're
going to
have the Trevor Hoffman Award winner, likely, for a National League closer.
In the conversation. Sure. I'll go with your point there.
Uh-huh. Here we go. And none of those guys are named Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis Jr., or Manny Machado. For all of these things to happen and for them to be on the outside looking in, there is still a part to me intellectually that says maybe there's a run there. Maybe this could come. If not, it will become the most disappointing season in the history of the team, and the most disappointing season maybe in the history of anybody not named this year's Mets.
Okay, so I think your point is that if before the season we'd said Blake Snell is going to step up and have the kind of year in his contract year that, you know, he hopes he has, because you're in your mind, you're like, yeah, Yu Darvish Joe Musgrove, you can count on them. Okay, cool. They have real life top three. Okay, yeah, that you're right. I think they'll be good. Or, oh, Ha-Sung Kim is going to bat 270 and get on base at a 350 clip and hit 20 bombs.
And steal 30 bases. Hey, and play
you mean with defense. with the big four also? Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Padres are going to be who we thought they were. And so, yes.
And Michael Wacha, who walks in during spring training in street clothes and joins your rotation.
Yes.
And Seth Lugo, who might have been the only guy who thought he was a starting pitcher before this season. And that all of these things hit, it makes the other stuff extra frustrating because all of these things that have to happen for a deep playoff run seem to be happening, except they're on the outside looking in with 5 weeks left in the season.
Again, big trash heap of missed opportunity is what you will be looking at if they don't come back. And by the way, I mean, this comeback would be, if not historic, it would be the first time that a team with whatever, 40-something, 41, 42 games came back to make the playoffs after being more than five games out since the Dodgers in 2008. So it has been 15 years since a team as far back as the Padres with, you know, now they're 4.5 out, but this far back with this little time to go made the playoffs. So it's real. And there's a reason for that. It's an uphill battle because you put yourself in a hole. I don't think many sub 500 teams had this much talent.
Right.
Here's one thing though. Today you'd feel a lot better about if it was Joe Musgrove in his spot. And there's another thing on the missed trash heap of opportunity is you didn't take advantage of these types of performances like Joe Musgrove when it was here. You weren't winning when everything was going right. And now you're having to rely on Rich Hill to get you through a game like today.
Right. And we'll see, Kevin. You know, every game means so much now. When we talk next, heading into the Marlins series, our tones will probably have changed again. You know, a big series for them and they're right back in it. A bad series for them and the season's over. That's all we've got riding on this weekend series against the Diamondbacks. Just mere survival.
You're correct. That's where we're riding the wave now.
It's crazy. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.